Joining us on the telephone is Karen Greenberg. Karen Greenberg is the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law, and she is the author of the book Rogue Justice, The Making of the Security State. Karen Greenberg, great pleasure to welcome you back to our broadcast. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Let's begin by just what was your sense of what we saw today so far in 2 hours of oral arguments?
You know, it's interesting. I had a little different takeaway than you did. I think it was incredibly informative in terms of giving the legal background to what was an impeachable offense, what was not an impeachable defense, the difference between a crime and an impeachable offense. I also agree with you that laying out the timeline was very important to when Donald Trump made the phone call, when he made the decisions, how much it was tied to Biden's announcing for the presidency, etc. But I think that I don't want to miss sight of the fact that yesterday's testimony and its ability to lay out in one large narrative structure, the entire story is just so important to even what we're hearing today. Because what they're trying to do is to establish the connection between the long narrative arc of this story and the legal framework that they are trying to have the impeachment discussion in terms of abuse of power and in terms of obstruction of Congress. So all I wanted to say was I think yesterday really was important, and not because we learned new facts, but because what a good prosecutor does in his opening statement, as in his summation, is put all the pieces together in a narrative arc. And I think that's what he did. And that's today's was, I think, fit into that story. And so they went together very well, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Karen Greenberg. And of course, we got you on a moment's notice, but we're hearing voices in the background. Do you have a radio on or a TV?
No.
Where you are? I'm just trying to figure out where that it might be on our end.
I don't hear anything other than
good.
You and some. Yeah, no.
Good.
If I see
I
any
will
radios,
persist.
I'll run
away. Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
And I will persist through it.
I mean,
it gets to an interesting question, right? Yesterday, we heard Republican senators, not all of them. There was John Kennedy from Louisiana who said that he had, for the first time, you know, learned some things, and he suspected some of his colleagues have learned some things. And I don't want to dismiss what John Kennedy's saying, because he has been a big supporter of Donald Trump. I don't suspect that he's going to turn on the president, but interesting he said that. However, the vast majority of Republicans, senators who came to speak to the press during these breaks like we're having right now, basically said that they've already heard everything that they are talking about. They don't know why they have to go through this process again. And I guess there's a temptation out there. People probably already are experiencing of what I would call impeachment fatigue. Did we lose you?
You did, but I'm back. I don't know what happened, but go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. did you miss that whole part?
No, I think I got to that there was a temptation. I think that was the last part about
of impeachment fatigue. Yeah, of impeachment fatigue. Of that we've learned a lot of this already.
Right, and we talked about this before in terms of, you know, things being boring. I think that goes into the same category of impeachment fatigue. I think that's okay in the sense that there may or may not be impeachment fatigue. There are going to be moments that are more important than other moments. But I think the longer this goes on, the more it repeats things over and over, the better it is for the country as a whole. And while there may be impeachment fatigue among senators and in Washington, I think in a lot of ways the country is beginning to get a sense, and you saw this in some of the interviews yesterday, that there's more here than meets the eye, and that this isn't going away. And so, yes, there may be that, but to think of it only in negative terms may not really be the fact. Right.
Now, eventually, we're going to probably get to a debate that if the senators debate it amongst themselves, we won't get to hear it because it'll be considered deliberations and will be closed to the public. Though we may get the debate from the House managers and Trump's defense team concerning witnesses. And we're still, you know, I want to play something that Chuck Schumer, the Democratic Senate Minority Leader, said a little bit earlier today about that. issue, and it pertains really to this idea that we're not hearing anything else new.
The same Republicans saying they heard nothing new just voted 9 times on Tuesday to hear nothing new. If they want new stuff, there's plenty of it. As the managers made clear, a lot of the documents are sitting there, all compiled, all ready to go. With simply a vote of 4 Republicans to subpoena them. So this argument that they heard nothing new when they vote against new evidence repeatedly rings very, very hollow.
Again, Chuck Schumer from earlier this morning, we are speaking to Karen Greenberg. Karen, it seems like a good point there. Yeah, of course you haven't heard anything new because you're not allowing anything new to be presented.
That's absolutely right. It's sort of like putting your hands over your eyes and saying, I can't see. And I think Schumer made his point very well. And I think, look, Adam Schiff made the point beautifully when he goes, wouldn't you like to know what was in whatever he was talking about at the moment? Because he did it many times. And sort of like getting the audience to say, yeah, it, you know, to ourselves, yeah, we would like to know. And then he's, well, you can't see these documents. I still think the idea that there's nothing new misses the point, that it is not just the details, which would be incredibly useful and helpful and, in fact, perhaps game-changing. The narrative structure that has been put together through this process is a very important one. And it's like in any other trial. This is why this is a trial and does rise to the level of a trial in some ways. And one way is that what happens at a trial is prosecutors and defense attorneys present evidence, each one on their own side. It's up to each one of them to tell the larger story to the jury. And I still think that even with nothing new, the larger arc of the story that's being presented is new. So that's really, you know, Schumer's point is right, but there is something new going on here with or without new evidence.
Again, Karen Greenberg is the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law, and she is the author of the book Rogue Justice, The Making of the Security State. Karen Greenberg, it's been reported that the Republicans have offered a deal. We will give you perhaps John Bolton to testify if we get to have Hunter Biden testify, and that is something that Chuck Schumer said he would not agree to. It's interesting because I guess if he were to agree to that, you would also, Democrats don't know actually what John Bolton, former national security advisor, is going to say. And then B, we're not even sure if they were to agree to that deal that John Bolton would actually testify because the president has offered has threatened, really, to use executive privilege with John Bolton based on national security. How does the law work out on that? I've heard it said when we're talking about executive privilege that the Supreme Court has basically said that it is at its highest point, legally speaking, to have that privilege when it comes to issues around national security.
Yeah, I mean, this is more about legal opinion, and the legal community has weighed in on both sides in this regard. I think it would be very hard to keep Bolton from testifying by executive privilege, but you never know. And you also don't know how the Department of Justice will weigh in, just as Barr did using the OLC memo that was written to give absolute immunity to anybody that was called to testify. So he might not testify, but I think he might not testify for other reasons as well, which is that the Republicans themselves will get in the way of this wanting to support the president and the president's initiative. But you know, you saw that Biden also on the campaign trail yesterday was very firm and discussed in some detail the fact that this wasn't going to happen. It's a weird standoff because in a way what you'd like, at least what I'd like, is for the Democrats to say, fine, we'll take the deal. Because Hunter Biden's not going to, they're not going to want to hear his testimony. First of all, it's irrelevant. It's going to become clear how irrelevant it is. And so it's kind of mind-boggling to me why they just don't take the deal and then see what happens. Because then, as a deal, I think Bolton would have to testify and Biden wouldn't have to testify. So I think that's what a lot of people are thinking, a little bit perplexed by it, and thinking maybe it's motivated more by Schumer and Biden really wanting to not be pushed into this because it's something they don't want to put Hunter Biden through. And they think it's, to their point, it's irrelevant in terms of a larger scheme. The Hunter Biden story really isn't attached to this in the way that Trump and his lawyers are saying it is.
I want to ask you about this issue of relevance for a witness to be able to testify. And yesterday I heard Ted Cruz, who wants witnesses, but he wants Hunter Biden's, who he really wants, a Republican from Texas, say that, of course, it's relevant. The charge here against the president is that this was a fraudulent investigation in order to improve his political standing. Well, how else can we determine if this was actually a fraudulent investigation? Donald Trump in the White House is saying that it was a proper investigation, a proper thing to ask Ukraine to look into Hunter, the Hunter Biden, and how he got onto the board of this energy company while his father was vice president. So they're saying that it actually is relevant.
Right, but what's not relevant is why that would be a problem when, you know, his father was not in a position to make hay of it politically, and why that would be a problem that was tied to this. In other words, is Biden's corruption relevant if it existed, which I don't think it does, but would it even be relevant to this story about the president trading national security and national interests for his private interests? I think part of it is apples and oranges, that you're really mixing things that are very different and trying to get away with it. The other thing is, you could probably bring into that line of questioning the questions about why Biden was so opposed to the prosecutor who was putting up with the corruption of Burisma, and that could be very interesting, which is another reason that many think that what's the big deal about the Bidens testifying, both of them.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's too full of holes, and they would come out both on the relevance issue and in what Biden was really concerned about with the prosecutor in Ukraine, that it would serve to the interest of the impeachment inquiry into Trump and would really be a negative in that direction. But I don't think we're going to know. I think this one is not going to happen.
I mean, if we don't have witnesses because Democrats refuse to allow, if they can refuse to allow, and it's not just Democrats, probably we're really talking about also four Republicans that have suggested they may vote for witnesses. But if this whole thing doesn't happen because Democrats don't like the idea of having Hunter Biden testify, hence we're not going to hear from Joe Biden, we're not going to hear from Mick Mulvaney, we're not going to hear from Michael Duffy of the Office of Management and Budget, it's a strange look, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. They should. I think they should take the deal. I think it's an unfair deal, but so what? I think that they have probably, and they think they have, right on their side, and it looks like that in terms of the story of corruption and what's really at the focus of this impeachment. But what we need are, as you said, what we need are Mick Mulvaney, what we need are John Bolton, what we need is the whole list of people, which is very long. You know, it's not just a couple of people who will come and testify about what happened. And it is so obvious that what they don't want to do is to bring forth witnesses because the witnesses will say things, not because they compromise national security, but because they compromise the head of state. And head of state and the people in his circle. And that's just not, look, we've seen this before. We've seen the term national security used to be a rubric for not just protecting the national interest, but making sure it doesn't get certain people either embarrassed or in trouble with the law. We've seen this in the war on terror in numerous instances, and we've seen it elsewhere. We know this playbook. And it's important for the country, not just for this trial, to say, no, we have a process. These are the rules of the process, and you can try to obstruct them in any way you want, but ultimately, we're going to get those witnesses, and we need to get them.
I think you bring up a very important point. Now, there are some government watchdog groups have, you know, created these charts showing the amount of times that national security has been invoked in order to keep information from either getting to the public or at least at the very minimum to Congress. And if you look at these charts, there's just this explosion, this exponential growth that really begins at, you know, right around 9/11. But even
yes,
before then, even in the 90s,
but still
– continuing more so. And here we are, kind of leads us to the moment that Donald Trump may not have created concerning this use or overuse of classifying information. He hasn't created this dynamic, but it's led us to a point where now he is in that same vein, doing, which I think is pretty remarkable and even pretty dangerous. And for me is like one of those really important things that may not be as talked about as much as it should be during this impeachment trial. And that's doing a blanket refusal to cooperate with Congress at all in this investigation.
Right. Another way of saying it is this was a logical, if a little bit amped up, foreseeable consequence of what emerged from 9/11 afterwards. And again, was built on earlier things, as you say. And you'll notice that in the statements about this trial, you've seen national security claimed on both sides. National security is claimed by the Trump administration and his lawyers as we can't give out these witnesses or these documents because of national security. And on the other side, you have individuals, Adam Schiff and others, saying, look, this is a matter of national security. We need to know this. And so national security is the magic word for whatever it is you want to claim. And I think that's also something that has led to this moment in time that we've been dealing with for the past two decades, as you say, since 9/11.
In this drift of what we consider and what I guess Arthur Schlesinger once called the imperial presidency, which people are now using frequently this term.
Exactly. Let me say one other thing that Arthur Schlesinger said, though. Arthur Schlesinger said that, you know, and his father, that history moves, American history has seemed to move in cycles. And, you know, from being very simplistic about this, from more conservative eras to more liberal eras, and that the cycle was about 30 years, which is just about generationally, you know, and a little more. And the real question here is, where are we in the cycle, or are we done with the idea of cycles in American history? Have we entrenched ourselves so much in a way of thinking about the presidency, and particularly when it comes to its tie to national, or its claim to national security, have we escaped those cycles? So,
what do you think? It's a good question. What's your answer to it?
I don't think the pendulum's swinging back.
Really?
I think that so much, yeah, because we had a Democratic president, a liberal president, who brought in some very much more liberally minded folks into the national security state with the presidency of Obama. And the truth was, it proved almost impossible to change things, either because of how they read the national security, global security landscape, or because it was just too hard to give up the powers that had accrued. But I do not think, as we used to think 10 years ago, that the pendulum is swinging back. And it's another reason I think this impeachment is so important, because it needs to, it's not just about Donald Trump. It's about what's happened to the country, what it's allowed to be claimed in the name of national security. And now we've seen it at the ultimate, where what's claimed in of national security, the president's powers, have now become clearly about personal interest. And you noticed yesterday that, and today, both Schiff and Nadler used national security, and then right after it, national interest, and then pivoted to personal interest. Sort of, it's the relationship of these three things that are at stake.
We're going to have a deeper conversation about that, Karen, and I hope you'll come back for it, because I have more to talk about on that very vein. I mean, that's an important topic, but the trial has resumed. Karen Greenberg is the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law. She is the author of the book Rogue Justice, The Making of the Security State. Karen Greenberg, I know we called you on a moment's notice, so we are wildly thankful to you for taking our call.
No, thank you so much.